Oh, yeah. Get up. Stand up for your rights.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Yes.
We're sitting down, but...
But in spirit, we're standing with
That's
you.
That's right. Well, the time's ticking. You know, I keep hearing people say to me on the street, what, you still here? It's like, I feel like, okay, don't worry, I'm leaving. But anyway, this is Alan Graf. I'm still here. This is like the second to last broadcast I'll be doing with Joanne. Next week will be our last one, kind of an end of the year, and we'll kind of bask in the glow, I guess, you know, the afterglow, and be like, you know, sitting around and smoking the cigarette after you know what.
I'm not going there at all. Not going to go there.
All right.
Good morning. This is Joanne Bowman.
Alan Graf, you listen to Voices from the Edge. And we are not that quite edgy this morning. We've got... We're going to enjoy whatever we call a holiday cheer. Of course, not the, have to be politically correct here. Not, we won't be celebrating consumerism and the shopping madness, but we will just be enjoying kind of the transitional seasons and all the stuff that comes with it and, you know, getting together with your family and that kind of thing. And so, that's kind of part of the context, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, this year I decided no lights, no trees, no anything like that. Mm. You know, it's all about family. It's all about friends. And just didn't want to get into the rat race. So decided this year I was going to check out.
Right. The tree, the perennial tree. Hey, back in the days of, you know, when I was the New York Jew, we would getting a laugh from Richard
days,
there.
Huh?
Yeah, we called that. We call what we had in our house the Hanukkah bush.
The Hanukkah bush.
That's right.
Depends on the neighborhood, right?
Yeah, I remember going to when I went to Hebrew school back in those great old days. I remember having like classes where they would, you know, try to make us Jews feel good that we didn't have like a Christmas tree. You know, they'd tell us about, oh, how, you know, Hanukkah is just as good as Christmas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually, Hanukkah isn't really that in terms of the really important holidays or the more significant holidays in Jewish religion. Isn't that significant? I mean, it's significant mm-hmm. because there's some cool stuff that it celebrates in terms of this miracle of this
rebirth
of the light, of the light staying on in the temple for 7 days with only 1 day's worth of oil. But it's not that a significant holiday, but it's become more significant because it's at the same time around Christmas, and Jews feel like they have to, like, hey,
right.
Like, we're Jewish. We're like, we're not celebrating Christmas, you know? So it's kind of interesting. I'll probably get some calls about that.
I mean, I grew up with a plastic Christmas tree. What did I know, right? It wasn't until I moved to Oregon that
really?
I actually had a live tree.
Plastic?
Yeah.
All right.
Plastic. I mean, a green. Every year we took out, actually it was white silver tinsel. Mm. So, you know, part of the Christmas tradition was pulling this tree out of the attic and putting all the pieces together, and that was our Christmas tree.
Yeah.
So when I came to Oregon, I finally enjoyed a real tree. But, you know, I'm sure we'll get some callers with some interesting questions about that, but there's a lot going on today that we want to talk about.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, the other thing is that the other part of the season is that it gets rainier and colder.
Yes.
And it also, I start thinking about people out on the streets.
Right.
Have to, like, deal with this sort of stuff. And, you know, we have to think about that, too. And sometimes, you know, unfortunately, we get in the, hey, let's help out our neighbor kind of mode, you know, in the Christmas spirit. But I was saying, well, it would be nice if we were in that mode 365 days of the year. But at least let's start doing that. And I like the idea that when it first turned cold the other week, the first thing I heard was from Tom Potter talking about how to figure out how we can help people who are out in the streets. I mean, that was good. I was like, really, okay, the mayor's taking charge here about something that's important. So, okay, kudos to Tom.
Yeah, we got a good mayor. Okay, well, what do you want to start?
Well, you know, I talked about the New York Times today. There's some articles in there that just, like, really got my attention. One of them's the strike, the transit strike in New York. I mean, they are just, like, going after the transit workers.
They are.
I mean, $1 million a day. They're talking about throwing the head of the transit union in jail.
Wow.
And, you know, at this point in time, though, what did the transit union workers have to lose? At $1 million a day, like, okay, well, we're already sunk. Who cares if it's $1 million or $20 million? You know, but in the meantime, also, New York is really shutting down.
Right.
And there's a lot of stuff, even more sort of semi-emergency stuff, like people in retirement and homes and places where they need kind of medical assistance. That's kind of getting sort of scary.
Right.
You know, and Pataki and Bloomberg, who are both Republicans, and Bloomberg's his own, like, billionaire, you know, is, like, characterizing the...
Thuggish and greedy.
Thuggish and greedy.
What is up with
wow.
that?
Wow. You know, and, like, okay... Thuggish and greedy. Now, guess what? Most of the transit workers, the majority of them, happen to be minority.
That's right.
And so this is an interesting dynamic that's playing itself out in New York, you know. I'm like, you know, I'm totally, and Elliot Spitzer, who is a Democratic attorney general, is going after them tooth and nail, who has ambitions to run for governor of New York. And I think we should all get on email and whatever and tell Elliot Spitzer, ask him what kind of Democrat he is. Being such a scab, you know. But, I mean, I support the workers. You know, I hate the idea that they're being, you know, classified as thugs. Like, what?
Right.
These are the folks that, like, keep you going every day. I mean, do really hard jobs. And somebody, you know, it's the old argument. You see it once again. Sizemore used this. Well, we don't have pensions and, you know, and benefits. Why
right.
should they?
Right.
So we go to the lowest common denominator.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, it's interesting that the president of the transit union is an African American man, and so Vajra Tassin is the president of the transit union. I wonder if they would use those very loaded terms if it was a white man that was the head of that union. You know, it's like it's very easy to publicly say, here's an African-American man, must be greedy, thuggish, right? Because those are the labels that they place on African-Americans in the media. And this is another perfect example of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the city, actually, if you look at the progression of events that led us up to the strike, the city, if they had decided to grant more pensions or I mean, it was something that's actually, the Times even argued, was really a small concession, the strike wouldn't have happened. So, in fact, it's kind of the city's fault in a way, and also the fact to kind of make workers feel like if they go on strike, they're evil, is really anti-American. I mean, if you want to talk about what some of the fundamental values of America, one is the ability of unions to strike. I mean, that's ultimately their power over the employer. You know, I mean, they can negotiate till hell freezes over, but if they don't have the right to walk out and they're criminalized or penalized, you know, to where the union could fall apart, I think that's really dangerous.
Well, and actually it's a trend across the country, right, is this move. I mean, if you watch what the airlines are doing, every time they start declaring bankruptcy, they go back to the union contracts and try to break them.
Yeah.
So you look at, PGE, Enron, what they did to union workers, and it's becoming the norm for people to take back pensions, break promises,
exactly.
Cut benefits, and say, well, that's the cost of doing business. That's what we've got to do in order to be profitable.
Right.
So it's like, it's not okay. It's not okay. And then to try to frame the argument is that these people are trying to get away with something when, in fact, they are hardworking public servants. And,
right.
And it goes back to how we've allowed the right to frame public service. Anything attached to government is bad.
Right.
Right? And
exactly.
So it's like, so what does that say about all the people who work for government? They all
yeah.
must be bad people?
Right.
That's insane.
Well, the other thing in terms of government, let's talk about another headline that came out of the New York Times that screamed at me this morning. It talks about how the New York City police have been regularly putting in undercover cops at peaceful protests, you know, where they carry signs, they mm-hmm. wear stickers and all of that. But they're legally allowed to do that, but they've gone beyond just being part of the demonstration. They've actually directed the demonstrations, helped change the focus of it. There was one particular arrest of a protester who turned out to be an undercover cop that spurred riot cops coming in, but it was all set up to where they arrested this guy and everybody's going, "Why are you arresting him?" And the riot cops came in. Well, whoever they arrested was an undercover cop.
Whoa.
So they set it up like that. And you know, it makes me wonder again. We've seen, you know, the cops in this town send, undercover cops to protest. I'll just tell you that. I mean, there are undercover cops at protests. I know that for a fact, having litigated against the police and found that out. They do that on a regular basis. But when they start actually, you know, trying to change the tenor of the crowd, the message of the crowd, that sort of thing, that is really unconscionable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, direct assault on First Amendment rights. I don't particularly like them being in the crowd in the first place, but if they're going to start doing that sort of thing.
Right, if they, well, yeah. And that's what they did in the 60s, so we're like going back to this.
Back again,
yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah, David Brooks, who is a very conservative editorialist, wrote an editorial in the New York Times today about how, you know, the reason that Bush had to, explaining why Bush directed FBI and the CIA to wiretap without warrants.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically saying, look, without that, they can't protect America. There's the argument again. I mean, you guys don't understand. When you're in the White House and listening to all these reports of terrorists this and terrorists that, you just can't deal with these clumsy laws.
Exactly,
you know?
Right. The law gets in the way of us protecting you. And,
right.
Of course, they know what's best for the American people.
Father knows best.
503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Yeah, and, hey, I know you're having a little bit of that Christmas schnapps out there just sitting under the your proverbial fireplace and resting. But give us a call. We'd love to hear through you. 503-231-8187. Another thing that happened in the news is, I believe it's the Fourth Circuit, called the government's bluff. The government, Jose Padilla, switched his status from a enemy combatant, and they wanted to try him in civilian court. And the reason they did this, because they didn't want the enemy combatant status reviewed by the U.S. Supreme Court. So they're sort of playing games with the Fourth Circuit. And the Fourth Circuit initially gave them a ruling that was really in favor of the government. The Fourth Circuit is very conservative. In fact, the judge who wrote their opinion was a nominee that Bush was considering for the Supreme Court. Well, that same guy, hey, this is really good, wrote an opinion yesterday telling the government that the Fourth Circuit was pretty disgusted with their tactics, and they were just using the court to manipulate themselves into a position where the Supreme Court couldn't get review. And really, it was from a conservative court, some one of the more sharpest rebukes that the government could have gotten.
Well, good.
Written by, you know, a potential Bush nominee.
Ah.
So that's good.
That
so we, you
good.
Know, so we can't, you know, assume that all conservatives are evil. And some of them do have integrity. And so I think that's good. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We'd love to hear from you. Why don't you tell us about Jefferson? You wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Here's what I know about what's happening. I think most people will agree Jefferson has been one of the most reorganized high schools in the Portland public school system.
Where's it located?
It is located off of Kirby in North, right across the street from PCC Cascade.
Mm.
And so on MLK and Kirby. So anyway, the proposal is to now turn Jefferson into a single-sex school. So all boy classes, all girl classes, uniforms will be required. This is a proposal that will be going in front of the Portland Public Schools School Board at the first board meeting in January. And so Alan and I were talking before the show started, and I said, I don't get this. I don't have enough information, so I'm not as outraged as Alan was when I was sharing the story with him. But what I know so far is that this is the proposal that's going in front of the school board. I don't know where the proposal came from, so I don't know if it's just a superintendent's proposal or if it's part of a citizens' work group that's been meeting around trying to figure out how to reorganize Jefferson once again.
So Jefferson is
a high school.
Mostly African-American, or at least
Northeast
had the highest,
Portland.
Highest percentage of African-American?
It's like 60% African-American.
Okay. So all the white schools in Portland don't have uniforms, but we put uniforms on the black
don't
kids.
Don't have uniforms and don't
That's
have single-sex schools.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't, for me, I need to know, well, what's the data show? And if this is a good formula for Jefferson, why not the whole school district? Yeah. You know?
Why don't we put barbed wire around the school, too?
I'm not quite sure what kind of message that sends. But I'm open. I want to talk to Superintendent Vicki Phillips and bring her on and ask her questions.
Yeah.
I also want to talk to some of the folks who actually been serving on the community committee to find out how they came to that conclusion, if in fact that's their conclusion. Mm. But the bottom line is, this is a school district that's been predominantly African American for over 20 years, and it has consistently failed the African American kids under its care. And
wow.
So, and it's been reorganized at least 10 times in the last 5 years. Five times in the last 10 years. But still, it has a very high inequity when it comes to reaching benchmarks for the African American and Latino kids that go there.
503-231-8187. You're listening to Voices from the Edge. Let's take our first caller. Good morning. You're on KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Joanne.
Yeah. What about me?
Let's see. In the spirit of get up, stand up, I had a question for you. I had a altercation with a police officer last night. I was stopped, kind of traffic stop, awaiting sort of direction to be moved around an area where there were some police officers removing limbs from the road that had blown down. And I was gestured ahead, and then when I stopped, I was stopped by the police officer who's coming at me going, no, 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 no. And I was amazed at how quickly this whole thing got very aggressive on the police officer's part. And I just wanted to file a complaint. The police officer came at me after, you know, a couple interactions back and forth. He'd flipped his mag flashlight around and was talking to me with the end of his flashlight. And I was amazed at how quickly it just got extremely aggressive on the police officer's part.
What do you mean he was talking to you with his flashlight?
The big mag flashlights that the police officers carry, they can flip them around, and they use the sort of bell-shaped end that houses the light bulb. They hold that in the palm of their hands, and they use the flashlight almost as a club. There's like an 8-inch or a 6-inch section that projects that has the batteries in it, and he was kind of wagging that in my face. And
how did it get to that point? Could you describe what happened?
I was behind the police car. It was very hard to tell because it was kind of uphill. It was wet. It was dark. It was kind of hard to tell why there was this mass grouping of police cars. But as I got closer, I noticed that they were pulling limbs across the street and dumping them over a bank where a branch had blown down on the street. And I stayed behind the police car. There was no oncoming traffic. And the officer who was Officer Weber, I found out later, was quite a bit above with this flashlight, and he was making gestures kind of on the roadbed with the flashlight. And I was kind of, okay, you know, there's no oncoming traffic and there's nothing seeming to happen. It's, you know, let's go. And then he flashed me with the flashlight, and I took that as the gesture on his part to go ahead and move out around where they're working and to continue on my way. And once I did that and crossed the yellow line over into the oncoming lane to go up beside where they were working, then he comes at me with a flashlight in my face, you know, with one hand up and the other flashlight, you know, the flashlight in my face. And I just said, you know,
And what did he say?
He goes, don't you know what this means? And he starts doing the flashlight on the street again, moving the flashlight back and forth on the street, basically just kind of taking it on his boot tops, just, you know, flashing the light back and forth on his boot tops. I don't know what that means.
Okay.
And I said, I was looking for some direction from you, you know. And he goes, well, don't you know what this means? And did the same gesture again. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I don't know what that means. And then he started literally, he started, you know, he flipped his flashlight around, and he just started, you know, making these gestures, like these, like, he was using it like a club, and just, like, talking to me with his flashlight, like he was going to thump me in the forehead with his mag light.
And so what happened after that? Did he finally let you go?
Yeah, he finally said, just get out of here, just get out of here.
So when he started doing that, did you feel scared?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that the next like, scene would be a bunch of cops sit on top of you beating you, right?
Or, yeah, dragging out of the car, yeah. Jumping me with their flashlight.
Yeah, yeah, hey, you know what? Being stopped by the police in this town is a scary event.
Yeah, that's
it's a scary event. There's hardly any accountability. You know, there really isn't. And you could file a complaint with the Independent Police Review Board, but Dan Handelman and Cop Watch who monitor it. I just saw a message from them just this morning about how a detective threatened to kill somebody. Who he was talking to, and the Citizen Review Committee found that there was sufficient evidence to sustain a complaint against this guy, and Foxworth overruled it and found there wasn't. And so, to me, you know, Joanne and I have worked...
And we're going to disagree on this one again, because I'm going to tell you to file the complaint, because if you don't file the complaint, then it continues to happen. So this particular case...
Well, you didn't know I wasn't going to say not to file the complaint.
Well, I know you were going to say it. I know you were going to say don't file it. File the complaint. You can go to any neighborhood precinct and pick up a complaint form.
Okay.
File the complaint and then keep a copy of the complaint, because that's the only way as a community member you can hold people accountable for following up on that complaint.
The only way. And unfortunately,
it's one way.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to be able to sue this guy. The thing about lawsuits is that there's so few lawyers in this town that you want to take cop suits. And me, for instance, the last cop suit... You know, I filed, which was against the Portland police. I still have one of my clients, Lloyd Marbette, coming after me for a bar complaint about it. So it's not much fun doing these things, let me tell you. And there's not a lot of lawyers who want to take these cases. So in terms of accountability, there's hardly any, you know.
Right.
I mean, we do got to keep working on this stuff. But, I mean, I would go along with Joanne. Sure, file a complaint. But
file the complaint and then
see what happens.
And then participate in the mayor's... charter review process. What if there were enough citizens that went to the charter review meetings and demanded to have an independent police review committee put on the ballot for the voters to decide?
Right.
They're in that process right now. The committee has been named. And so, Alan, it's funny because the longer I'm with Alan, I realize I'm just really a very conservative liberal. I have no idea how
liberal.
A conservative liberal.
What is that? Is that an oxymoron?
Because I actually think that you have to fully utilize the systems that are in place, right?
Well, I believe that.
And if those systems aren't effective, then you've got to work to actually change those systems.
Well, so I am a lawyer. You know, I actually went to law school. Although, you know, I kept thinking, am I selling out?
But file the complaint. Check the City of Portland, the mayor's website. Find out when the next Charter Review Committee meeting is taking place. And then follow up on the complaint.
And call Cop Watch, too.
And call Cop Watch,
236-3065, 236-3065.
Okay.
We appreciate
I was like, you know, if I see the bubble gum machine going off, you know, back in my rearview mirror, I think, oh, my God, I'm going to have to... Normally what I do is, the way I interact, I try to diffuse cop paranoia or a cop, is to put on my best Lenny Bruce. I go into my humor mode. I mean, not too much, but I'll be joking around and blah, 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 blah. I'll try to diffuse it, you know what I mean? Just to a point, you know, but...
Right.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Alan, if you are a 50-something white male...
Right.
You have luxury of being able to joke around with police when they stop you.
Unless you're Alan Graf with a ponytail.
right,
then you get relegated back to minority status or worse, let me tell you. You're who?
Well,
pull over.
I think there will be some people that will debate that. But the point is that, yeah, it depends on who you are, whether or not that strategy would work.
Yeah, right.
I mean, for me, I'm like dead serious. The
dead
hands
serious.
Are in plain sight. What is it? Yes, officer. No,
exactly.
Officer. I am as polite.
Yeah.
I am
don't reach for your cell phone.
I do not reach for anything.
Anything. You don't even scratch your nose.
I don't move.
Yeah. Your hands do not move. No. And they're in plain sight.
And statistically, right. I'm supposedly pretty safe, right?
Well.
But tell that to Kendra James.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So thank you so much for your call, caller.
Thank you so much for the input.
You're welcome. Right. Have a great day.
You too.
Hey, you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. And it is the holiday season. Oh, you hear Bill O'Reilly was like on people like, what, you can't say Merry Christmas? Oh, my God. Where did that guy come? What hole did that guy crawl out of?
Him and Lars Larson.
Right. They're same Hobbit house together.
I got to put a shout out to my husband. Since my husband gave me my iPod shuffle, I have not listened to Lars Larson at all. My radio just doesn't even go on unless I'm listening to K-Boo. It is absolutely.
I don't know how you could take that guy.
I used to feel like I actually had to listen to what they say, but now that all their information is in print, I don't really actually have to listen to them.
I actually, you know, had a debate with him over on Social Security on cable access, and I mean, his debating style was very, you know, he was very tricky, but we actually had a pretty good. It was a pleasant rapport.
Uh-huh.
We actually were pretty nice to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good.
Right.
I mean, it was interesting. It wasn't his venue, you know.
Right, right.
He wasn't controlling
the
mic.
It wasn't his house, that's right.
Right.
That's
he couldn't shut me off when he wanted to. And he actually interviewed me before, and he just wouldn't let me say anything. He'd always cut me off. And I finally just hung up on him, you know, on the air. That was great. I said, what First Amendment? Click.
Well, I have to say, when I was a state legislator and even over the last years after that, him and I had some really good conversations. And because, you know, he wouldn't make me say what he wanted me to say.
Yeah.
But I think we ended up actually with a mutually respectful relationship. Not that, well, I don't, yeah, I guess that's inappropriate.
Maybe, yeah.
I guess that's appropriate.
You're really respectful.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
I respect the fact that...
It was civil, at least.
Civil.
Yeah.
A civil, respectful relationship.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was... But I was one of the few legislators that would actually go on air and talk to him. Because most people just said, no, I'm just not even going to go
right,
there.
Right, right.
And I think that's one of the things that's kind of endeared Randy Leonard, because he will actually go on and battle it out with him. And
really? I don't think he does it anymore, though.
Well, I don't know if he's... Well, of course, I haven't listened to him since I've got my iPod shuffle, so...
What is an iPod shuffle?
It's a little tiny music box where you can put 200 songs in and play your own songs, whatever songs you want to listen to.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Technology.
And we do have a caller. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, you're on KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Alan, this is Mark.
Mark, how you doing?
Pretty good, although I'm very distraught with... the closing of this halfway center on 10th and Main.
What is it? Tell us about it.
Well, I guess this is part of the Department of Corrections. It's a halfway house, and it was closed, and then it was reopened, and now it's closed again. And there's a sign. In the front of the building, explaining that this has been declared surplus property.
And what was it? Is it southeast or southwest Maine?
Southwest.
Okay, and is a halfway house meaning from people who are coming back from prison?
Yes, that's right.
Reintegrate into society?
Yeah, so it was finally reopened,
mm-hmm.
and now, strangely enough, it's closed. And, of course, there is so much surplus property, you know, and... But it's certain. This is really you know, vital, indispensable social service. You know.
Do you know what organization ran that halfway house?
No, it was a county county.
It was a county facility.
I think it was part of the Department of Corrections. Maybe I should try to email.
Well, if there's a sign that says surplus, who's the sign from? It's from some government entity, right?
Right. Well, you have to go there. It's just a couple blocks from the library.
Well, I'm just curious because it's like, because my next thing would have been, you should contact whatever the company is that actually posted the sign.
Well, I think it is a county building. I think it's part of the Department of Corrections. I'll have to go by and...
Well, the Department of Corrections is a state organization.
Yeah.
So if it was the county, it would be part of the Multnomah County Community Corrections System. But I can't tell from the information you've given me.
Well, I hope that we can research this and maybe bring the building back into life. It's so sad, you know, that all of the advantages are given to the wealthy, and that, you know, we're called to proclaim joy to the world, not just to the super rich. And it's strange to me, you know, with the tram projects and the absurdity of revitalizing 5th and 6th, that we're just following kind of an anti-human corporate model, that there seems to be an unwritten law that Portland has to become like San Francisco, has to become dysfunctional. So I just want to mention that, and thank you for all your passion, for your untiring effort for social justice. I uploaded an article entitled "What Are Social Human Rights?" I just uploaded this this morning on Portland Indie Media, and raises the question: who prosecutes those responsible for more than a billion people having to live on a dollar a day while wealth constantly grows? So you know, social human rights, even though they're a weak instrument, they're very vital, and we just have the great challenge of kind of changing the conversation and emphasizing, you know, rights and logic that are beyond the corporate logic.
Right.
You know, you're absolutely right, and what I hear you saying, though, is that we're really talking about a bigger problem than just one building and one program that may not exist anymore. We're really talking about how does the community support itself, and what is the community's priorities, and what are the values of a community? And then one of the other big issues is when people go away to prison, don't we have a responsibility to successfully reintegrate people back into their local community? So any of the issues that you brought up this morning could be a whole program.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your very thoughtful comments.
Good. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Mark. Hey, next week, folks, okay, I want you to get, we're going to give you a homework assignment here, okay?
Homework, yeah.
All right, next week is Joanne and mine, or I don't know if I get the correct grammar right. I and Joanne, me and Joanne. Joanne and I. All right. It's going to be a last program.
Yes, yes.
And what we'd like you to do is think about something that happened in one of our shows. How long have we been doing this? A couple years, maybe?
Like five
really?
Years?
Really? That
yeah.
long? Wow.
Yeah. We've been doing this
anyway,
for a while.
Just think of a memorable moment in our programming that you went, wow, that's fantastic, or what?
Are they out of their mind?
Yeah, they're out of their mind. We'd like you to bring it up. Now, I know some of you, like, don't remember anything that we talked about whatsoever.
Right.
You're either fuzzy or you've taken too many drugs or whatever, you know, and so that'd be fine. But if you can, you could help us sort of reminisce on, you know, some of the stuff that we talked about over the years here and something that you really liked or flashed on or made you decide to listen to us again. That would be really cool, so we can have kind of like a reminiscing type of thing.
That would be fun.
So anyway, I want you to just sort of think about that, maybe write it down and call in with it next week. It would be really, really appreciated, since it will be our last program. Another thing I wanted to just mention about Mark's message is the idea of plausible deniability.
Mm.
And what's happened, I think, and I see Alexander Coburn wrote a really good article about this. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing these days in terms of, you know, torture and abuse of the Bill of Rights, That stuff has actually been practiced not only in the Bush administration, but many others before. We've been doing that for a while. We have something called the School of Americas, where we give PhDs to people in torture, and we send them across different countries like Guatemala, for instance, and they practice this sort of thing. But they've been doing, our government has been doing that sort of thing for a long time. We have a long record of it. We've increased the amount of it in terms of doing it under the Bush administration, but the difference basically between Bush and other previous administrations is now they're proud of it. They no longer deny that they're doing it, but say, we have to do it to protect you. And so what they're actually doing now, in fact, is taking away plausible deniability to all the people who have done that, mm-hmm. and setting themselves up in a way to be the next Pinochets of, you know, in the next 25, 50 years, where if the balance of power shifts and suddenly the U.S. government is no longer the most powerful country in the world, all these people under Bush, including Bush himself, could face criminal charges, extradition, their passports revoked, everything that happened to Pinochet. Mm-hmm. Just keep that in mind, because what difference is there between Pinochet and some of the stuff that Bush has done on a global level, in terms of the level of torture, secret prisons, destruction of the Bill of Rights, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, some to a degree, but really, in terms of actually what they're doing, not much different. So think about that. The government, actually, by being so arrogant, may be setting themselves up for criminal prosecution or some sort of accountability later on down the line.
But, you know, it's interesting because the point that you made with the last caller was the fact that there's so few lawyers that are willing to take on the place.
Right, yeah.
Think about the national scale that you're talking.
That's right.
You know, it would take an incredible lawyer to be willing to, at that level, to file a class action lawsuit against the federal government.
That's right. Well, there's, you know, Fitzgerald, interesting, who we'll see if he, you know, actually comes up with something where he gets, you know, an indictment against Karl Rove. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it'd be interesting to see
That'd
what happens.
That'd be a start, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always more than encouraged to see, let's say, you know, a conservative court like the Fourth Circuit actually
mm-hmm.
rebuff
right.
the government. I mean, that makes me think, well, okay, maybe there is some hope, because I know, you know, somebody like Stephen Reinhardt in the Ninth Circuit, who was a very liberal judge, would rise to the occasion instantly. But when you have the more conservative judges still, holding to the rule of law, even though it's against what there may be political inclinations, that's a good thing. You know, the system is actually working, at least to some extent. By the way, at 9 o'clock, Jade Pekala hosts the Radio Zine. Oh, new voice and new face at KBOO. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, hear part 3 of Will Seaman's series on Israel-Palestine. His guest is Tanya Reinhart, professor at Tel Aviv University and the University of Utrecht. She's the author of Israel-Palestine, How to End the 1948 War. And at 10:30, Damali Eyo, guest host. That would be good. A ghost host. Art Focus. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! Speaking of ghosts, we were driving around my neighborhood last night, Eleanor and I, we saw one of these ghost bikes parked over, I think it was around 9th and Roselawn.
What's a ghost bike?
It's a place where a bicyclist was killed.
Oh.
And they put a kind of white, mangled bike up, and they tie it to a pole.
Oh.
As a memory of the person who had been killed there. It was really, I was, you know, kind of heavy passing that, thinking that someone lost their life mm-hmm. on a bike. I think it was good, you know, to do that as a reminder. So being a bicyclist myself, sometimes I fear, you know, people like not paying good enough attention. Mm-hmm. And so.
Well, you know, it's always hard when anybody loses their life unnecessarily. As a motorist, though, I know that many bicyclists have taken their lives into their own hands the way they drive in traffic, you know. So it's both sides.
Most of them, though, I think are good. As a bicyclist, I'm going to be supportive. I mean, I do see some people, you know, whiz by me, you know, I think, oh my God, they're like endangering everybody on the road.
I've seen real insanity from both sides. So
But remember, the both sides is the other side is they got a big car and they're not going to get hurt by a bicyclist, you know.
So that means the bicycle should use common sense
in maneuvering
around an automobile.
Yeah, but I mean, it's. And,
Yes.
All right, disagreement. Ding, ding, ding. Now, wait a second. Let's talk about bikes. Let's compare bikes and cars. Car, burning oil, polluting the atmosphere, possibly the cause of our war in Iraq, billions of dollars lives lost, while someone who's on bike and not burning anything at all happens to,
anything at all. deciding that they want to be a car when it's convenient with the traffic, and then they want to be a bicycle when the light changes because they don't want to sit and wait for the traffic.
No, I agree with that. I think they should follow the rules, too. Just like putting in context here.
As am I. Yeah. As am I.
All right.
Okay. Oh,
okay.
Let's talk about lame jokes.
Lame jokes.
Yeah.
All right.
Former State Senator Neil Bryant and his application to be on the board of, who's a Ben lawyer, former Oregon State Legislator, Ted Kulongowski nominated him to be on the Higher Education Board in Oregon.
Right.
And when asked if he had a disability, he put white male in the box where it asked that question.
Yeah. Is that a joke?
He thought it was.
Oh, okay.
He thought it was. And so the governor, when he gets this application back, picks up the phone and says, Neil, what's up with this, right?
Yeah.
And Neil says, ha, oh, it's just my attempt at being funny. Governor says, I'm not amused. I think you ought to withdraw your nomination.
All right.
So his nomination has been withdrawn.
Well, good.
I think that's really good.
That's good.
What was interesting, however, was this morning, his Oregonian had an editorial saying that the governor overreacted in asking Neil Bryant to withdraw from consideration.
Mm.
I actually think it was very appropriate. If you aren't bright enough to know that there are people with real disabilities in this community that don't get the kind of support that they need, and you think putting white male into the disability column is funny, and people are going to look at that and just think, oh, what a great sense of humor he has.
Yeah, well, the comment implies the... Oh, the white
poor
males.
Poor white man.
Poor white man. We're always picked on because we're not politically correct, you know, per se, blah, blah, blah.
But it actually shows how culturally incompetent he is to actually think that that would be a funny joke.
Exactly.
So I think it was a wise choice by the governor to back away from that nomination.
All right. Oregonian, boo. Joanne, yay. 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would just like to make a quick comment about this whole police thing.
Yeah.
I've been not at such a good point in my life, and I've had a lot of run-ins with cops, and I have to tell you, I haven't had bad cop experiences, so I don't know who's having these, and I think it might have to do with your attitude going into the situation, because I've never feared cops, and I've never really been afraid of their wrath, and I've never really received any of their wrath.
Well, I think there are definitely good cops out there, and I've actually had stops where cops were really nice to me, so I don't think it's necessarily going to happen every time.
I think you scare people when you say, oh, these cops are terrible, and this is a horrible thing, and I think you get people on edge, and it's a cyclical thing. People react to the cops poorly, and the cops react poorly to them.
Well, I think people ought to be aware. I think Portland has a history of bad cops. Portland has a history of hiring cops, not using the right psychological testing for cops, attracting the wrong people to the position, and having no accountability whatsoever. We had, let's say, for instance, a criminal justice system where nobody who did wrong was ever punished. Wouldn't that end up having a society that would be just totally out of control? Well, the same is true with the cops. There's no accountability. They never get indicted in the grand juries. I mean, there's never been a cop convicted of murder for the last, 40 years here. The police accountability, the Independent Police Review Board just doesn't work, and there's not many lawyers who want to sue the cops. So there's no real check and balance. And so you know, given that there people do, it's worrisome, you know, when a cop stops you. So I'm just putting that out more as a cautionary thing, but I appreciate your viewpoint too. I don't think all cops are bad, and I think there are a lot of cops who are doing a good job.
You talk about dogs smelling fear. I think the cops, you know, smell the attitude, and they react accordingly.
Wait a minute. Now, you're talking about people who supposedly are well-trained, are not supposed to take emotion into any situation that they're
supposed to. Wait a minute.
All of us are not humans with sidearms on our side.
Right.
The reality is these people are trained. They have the full force of the police department behind them. I have an expectation that they react responsibly, that they are a calming influence. They are supposed to be working with the community to make the community better. They are not supposed to be racially profiling, singling out specific people in communities to target for abusive behavior. They're not supposed to be targeting people mainly because they're homeless for harassment, for abuse on the street. Now, and these are things I've seen with my own two eyes. So it's not, I don't sit and listen to people tell me what's happening in my community. I've seen this with my own eyes.
Well, I can only speak for myself in traffic situations and some of the stupid things I've done. And obviously, I haven't been in violent situations, and I'm a white male, so I can't talk about discrimination and that. But I can just say that I have never had a problem with the police, and that's
all right.
I appreciate that. Could you answer one question for me?
Sure.
Do you agree that because of your advantage as a white male in our society, that you are safer in an interaction with a police officer than someone who is not white male?
Yes, because I'm a white male, and generally he's a white male.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
I agree with that.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Okay.
I got a little emotional with that one.
503-233.
I tried not to do that.
231-8187. Come on. Get emotional. Let's spill out. 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. You're in KBOO.
Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry to see you guys go.
Well, no, me.
I'm not going anywhere.
Is it going to be the Joanne Bowman show?
Well, it's going to be Joanne Bowman and some guest hosts for the first few months next year.
Okay. Well, I know you're spunky enough to carry it forward.
Well, thank you.
Now, I have some information on that couple callers previous about that downtown facility.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was called the Multnomah County Restitution Center.
Oh.
And then I think in the last few years they called it the Work Release Center.
Right.
It's fully owned by Multnomah County and controlled by the sheriff's office, Bernie Giusto, our illustrious sheriff.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now I'm going to have editorial comment, which is we need a new sheriff. Bernie Giusto is a law enforcement officer from the state troopers. He was a driver to Neil Goldschmidt. So he seems to value enforcement, but not rehabilitation,
mm-hmm.
treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what it did. I had a dear friend who worked there, and they would, for instance, give people their GEDs if they didn't have it, and they would be under court order. So, like, they couldn't just, you know, hang out. They had to perform. So you don't have a high school diploma, you get your GED. You must get a job. They could dress in civilian clothes and during the day at a job that's been confirmed, go and work. The supervisors or managers of the company would report back and tell them, you know, are they doing okay or not. If they didn't perform, they would go back into the general inmate population and would not have the privilege of being able to integrate in society. It was a very successful program, but not a high profile. Not a high-profile program. And Joanne, you know how a lot of good programs in government don't get a lot of publicity.
Exactly.
And they end up dying on the vine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you add that to the fact that our elected sheriff, who is, you know, an enforcement guy, and by the way, you can see Multnomah County's perspective in their sheriff's office. Have you noticed the military-looking uniforms?
Yes,
I have. Now, I only brought that up because it shows an attitude. When your officers go from kind of a sherbet lime green, which is kind of, you know, a pastel color, to basically a combat uniform with cars that are even combat colored, then you see it's basically a militarized institution, and the jails are warehouses for human beings instead of realizing that 95% of those inmates are going to go back into society, and we need to have them be able to function. So this was the old Rajneesh Hotel. Do you remember the Rajneesh?
Oh, yeah.
Right, and so the county picked it up for a song. I believe in 1987, they bought the Rajneesh Hotel for about $1.8 million. Now that it's surplus, see, this is where the county commissioners come in. They exercise budgetary authority over the sheriff, and they've done some good things to try to constrain the sheriff's wasteful spending and priorities, but they never, ever once defended this program. And right now, Multnomah County, the most populous county with the most inmates, has no work release program, yet Washington County, Clackamas County, and most rural counties have some form. Now, there's something wrong with the priorities when our county doesn't have a progressive, positive kind of thing for the inmates. And one other thing,
let me just stop it for a minute. I remember working for Judge Diaz as her clerk for a couple of years, working there in law school, and I just want to I'll miss her terribly. She died in the last couple of months here. But while I worked there, I remember they had a forest work program where people who were on probation or people in work release could go out and work out in the woods and do work like that. I remember it was like a really good program. Is that still in existence?
No.
Do you know? No?
Well, the county forest program is closed, too.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, the state one. But the thing is that I think what really we need to focus here is that, like, right now, Multnomah County inmates do pick up litter on the side of the roads.
Right.
Okay, but picking up litter is not a job description when you're getting back in the real world. And so what they did in the restitution center, now the key thing is restitution. Not only were these inmates getting themselves together with drug and alcohol treatment, anger management, because many of them couldn't deal with relations between people, and also getting their GEDs, but they were actually going to real jobs,
right,
getting real work histories, working with real people in real situations, not picking up litter by themselves on the side of the highway with a sheriff sergeant looking over their shoulder with a shotgun. And so, frankly, that's the kind of positive and civilized transition that these people need. And that is completely gone. And the county commissioners are basically going for short-term money, because they're taking that $1.8 million property now downtown, and if you look at it, there's high-rises all around. They'll probably get $5 or $10 million for the property,
right,
put it into the general fund,
right,
and then, gosh knows, spend it on
what. And away it'll be gone. Okay, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Actually, first I wanted to make a statement. So you're absolutely right that Bernie Gusto controls the correction dollars in his budget. So
Is it Gusto or Justo?
Justo.
Okay.
Well, he proposes a budget, but my understanding is the county commissioners say yay or nay and can actually jostle around the numbers. He kind of says a wish list, and then they say this is the reality.
Well, remember, he is also an elected official in his own right. Now, they give him a budget, but they don't tell him you have to spend – they cannot tell him that you have to spend this money in XYZ fashion. He proposes a budget for his department. He says, these are all the things I'm going to do. Then they give him the pot of money. But if what's happened over the last 4 years has been that he has actually shifted money after his budget has passed.
So I see. So you're saying he gets the money and he can do anything he wants with it.
He spends significant money in overtime so that he can have his officers make – many of them make anywhere from $40,000 or more in additional dollars in overtime each year because of how he spends his budget.
Yeah, Joanne, you're going to do really great, you know, in this coming year. one other thing I'll say is that, frankly, you know, okay, what's done is done.
Right.
We could prevent the property from being sold, because the proximity of that facility, which is ready to go, it had people living there. You know, they weren't living in jail. They were actually living there. The neighborhood association had an agreement that actual neighbors sat on a board and would say yes or no to each and every inmate. They literally had the ability to veto any inmate from residing within their neighborhood. And that has been gone. That was hard negotiated and fought some 15 years ago.
Wow.
These folks paid restitution, which means they were paying their victims.
Exactly.
And not only society and getting themselves from broken humans to humans that are going to add to our society, but they were actually paying back under court order the victims that they victimized, and are, I think, frankly, we can do this again, but where is a candidate running against the sheriff? What about the Green Party?
You got to the point.
Or another Democrat or somebody.
I was about to suggest you run.
Alan Graf for president?
No, you. You're a guy who's, I don't know you, but you're
passionate
about this. You got the facts. You're passionate. Why don't you run against Bernie? I heard nobody's running against
him. That's what I heard, too.
Well, you know what?
Why don't you take up the cause?
Well, you know, come to think of it, I guess I'm full of it, so I could run, too.
Well, you're full of some good ideas.
Well, I mean, but you raise a good point, which is the Restitution Center was an excellent community resource, community partner. I still ask the question, now that it's been labeled surplus property, are there community-based organizations and neighborhood association organizations that could develop a proposal to put in front of the county commission about how to maintain that as a community resource? We don't need other $250,000 condos popping up downtown.
I think that's a good point. I'll leave you with this. I think that if there's a sign that says surplus, certainly, we know it's the county.
Right.
You call the property tax department of the county that liquidates surplus properties. That's
exactly.
Easy to find. You can call 823-4000, and then we can find out when is it supposed to be auctioned off. We have our elected officials, the county commissioners. We can say, pull it from the surplus property list until we figure out what to do.
That's right.
And because we can't afford to build a new building for $10, $20, $30 million, we might have an old building, but one that functions and that is could be used in a great location. Give us time to figure something out.
Give me the address again.
Excuse me?
The address is on Southwest Main, but what's the address?
If you just refer to it as the Multnomah County Restitution Center or Work Release Center, that'll get you there. I don't actually have the address, but it's really close to the Safeway there near PSU and in that area.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate
the
call.
11th and Jefferson.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hey, you all listening to Voice from the Edge?
We got some pumped up callers today, don't we? Well,
people
are passionate. They care about the issues they want to talk about. I love it.
Absolutely.
And this is Joanne Bowman.
And I'm Joanne Bowman.
No, you're not Joanne Bowman.
Well, the real
Skip
Joanne
will be
Bowman.
Surprised.
Hi, Skip. I went through an operation here. But anyway, yes. Remember that program? Will the real Joanne Bowman please step forward? Remember, there were like three people.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
And, you know, they'd have three people behind.
What's my line?
Was it three people behind a curtain, or that was another program? Remember me when I was in high school with you?
Yes.
And I pulled your dress or something like that.
I used to beat you up every day after school.
Oh, my God, it's you. Right. Exactly.
I was actually
having this conversation with my wife the other day. Remember we had the snow here a couple of days ago?
Right.
Well, like in the morning, I impishly got up. She was sitting at the desk. I went out and made myself a snowball.
Oh, good for you.
And I came in and I threw it at her. Of course, I missed. She claims I didn't do it. I missed. I did miss intentionally.
Right.
Actually, a bad aim. And then I explained to her when I was in fourth grade, the way I tried to get attention from the girls was to throw snowballs at them. And it was actually a compliment that I was throwing a snowball at her. And I dragged her outside and showed her that actually my aim was pretty good. So I threw it at a telephone pole, but I missed. So my argument totally dissolved. At that point, she was going, okay.
And I married this man.
Yeah, right. All right. Take it under advisement here.
All spousal units at one time or another say, huh, I married that person.
Spousal unit, I like that.
Spousal units,
Is that the new one? That's better than, what's the other one? Significant other?
Yeah.
Or old man or old woman?
Right.
Oh, my
right.
God, old man. This is my old man. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
He's like, ah.
I coined that phrase myself, in fact.
All right.
Spousal unit, yes.
Spousal unit.
Yes.
I like that. Okay.
503-231-8187 is the number to call.
And let's go to the next caller. Good morning. You're on KBOO.
Good morning. I just got to tell you, I really love listening to your program and your upbeat attitude and accompanied by honesty. And I think it's wonderful. And I hope a lot of people are tuning in.
Thank you.
But I have something that all of the things that are going on with our government and our president, I get so frustrated watching the national news and listening to the commentators debating over whether or not what he's done now is justified.
Oh, yeah.
In the war against terror. You know, I think that the minimum we should expect from our president and his elected officials is that he respect our and uphold the laws of this land and be true to his word. When he says something that we see the, you know, evidence that he's doing it, and he, it seems that everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie. And he continues to abuse his authority and his power. And I think it's directly reflected in the people like the police here in Portland. Their attitude is that they can do what they want to do, and they aren't accountable.
That's right.
Until even the people who support the war and agree that we need to have greater surveillance of people's emails and their telephone calls and maybe even these renditions that, you know, hauling people off, even if they agree that those things need to be done, they should hold the president accountable for changing the laws if that need be and following some procedure of accountability and you know, checks and balances. The things that's happened to the people in New Orleans, those people are still homeless.
Yes, they are.
They're still hungry in the richest country in the world. And God forbid that a disaster happen here, you know. And then we really see, you know, what it's like to be a nobody. You know, those people work for us.
Absolutely.
And it seems that everyone in the country should demand that the president uphold the law.
Yeah, well, at the minimum, you know, I mean,
yeah.
To me, I think, I mean, when people call George Bush and cronies criminals, I agree with that, but I don't,
yeah.
I think that's actually an understatement. I think in terms of history of the planet, they are, you know.
Genocidal,
that's a good term.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've created such irreparable damage environmentally, socially, politically, economically, spiritually, how about that?
Yeah.
That, you know, if we, they may have, you know, who knows? It could portend the end of the human race.
That's really what I'm thinking, too, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least the end of our country as an example to the world. I know that a lot of that was facade and cover up
right. In
the past, but the thing is, we see it now. And now in more ways than ever before, we the people of this nation are accountable for the conduct of the people we've elected, because we know what they're doing.
Right.
And there is no doubt, and I'm sure, you know, people may agree with some of the things they're doing, but they, you know, I just like to, hopefully, people start to become aware that we, as individuals, are now accountable. When they snuck around and did things, and we didn't know about it, and we're just now finding out about a lot of things that happened in the Vietnam War, and that we weren't responsible for our ignorance, but we're responsible today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate that.
Appreciate your thoughtful comments. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you do, Joanne, listening to Bush? You ever see him on TV? Have you watched him recently? His latest, like, don't despair. You know, I mean, we're going to bring democracy. You know, his new tactic, like, I feel your pain. You know,
it's the
latest one, trying to be like, no, I'm not going to, like, call you traitors anymore, you traitors.
Right.
You know, if you disagree with me, you know, but I feel your pain. You know, that one, did you see that?
I mean, that was just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, right.
And that's actually the first time I've listened to him in quite a while, because I just can't stand to even listen to his voice.
Right. I mean, yeah.
But I did listen to him for actually about 10 minutes, which is longer than I've been able to listen to him for quite a while. And you're right. He plays on that down home kind of.
Right. He's good at it.
He's got his act
right.
down pat.
That's right.
But the reality is that he is also a master at not answering questions. So I was actually listening to the reporters questioning him after his
press conference. I heard that too.
And
where he changed the rules, or he's joking about rules.
Yes. And just, you know, blatantly will not ask the questions, answer the questions
right.
that are being asked, and then the media allows them to get away with it.
That's right.
You know, because it's like, well, there used to be a time that the media would say, but you haven't answered the question. You
right.
need, what's the answer to the question?
Exactly.
And each media outlet would go back and make sure that they answered, and now
yeah.
they just play such softball. It's like, okay, well, you don't feel like answering it today. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we don't
remember
want...
Helen Thomas, wasn't she like a White House correspondent for years and years?
Yes.
And she actually was pretty good about posing tough questions.
Really tough questions.
Back, she was back way back to Lyndon Johnson, I think, or even Kennedy. And she's no longer around. But, she's actually still alive. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be nice to have somebody like her back in the press corps.
Exactly.
The other thing is, if you get too aggressive, suddenly you find your invitation revoked.
Has been revoked, exactly.
503-231-8187. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the internal affairs of the police department.
Okay.
The scam. These people that commit crimes, they don't have to go in front of a judge or jury as if you and I would have to go in front of. They go in front of a judge and their peers that they work with, and they try them that way privately. And how can you get any kind of real outcome out of that?
Well, supposedly, if a police officer commits a crime, they go through the same system, supposedly, is the big key word here,
supposedly.
That the rest of us do.
Right, but
you know,
they don't, because I actually...
It happens occasionally.
Right. And
but not a whole lot.
Right. And you were on a show a while back, I saw, with Don DuPay. He was a host of a show, and he was an ex-Portland Police Department. And he was blasting the internal affairs because they don't. He, in his 14 years, they don't go in front of the same people that you and I go in front
yeah.
of, and it really is frustrating because it's well, they're not nice anymore. And
right.
What happened? You remember I heard something about the milkman a long time ago. There used to be milkmen that walked from house to house and la di da di da. And the police used to go from house to house, and used to be able to walk up to them and say, "How you doing, John or Sarah? How you doing?
Right.
How's your sister?" You know, you can't even walk up with them without it
That's
actually
right.
worrying about them looking at you in a
exactly.
You can't even be innocent now. They
That's
look
right.
at you as guilty.
That's right.
And
yeah.
now, then, when we come to them and say, "Well, you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent," well, you're just out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're just anti-cop.
Right, and. Here's another thing is here's the to go to the New York thing is here's the dissolving of our unions through financial and public recourse. That the city's going to throw this guy in jail for standing up for people's rights,
right.
And it's they're really showing the people that unions are completely worthless, which
yeah.
they used to not be.
Yeah, I want to tell you something. I'm going to make a confession here that I screwed up the other day.
What's that?
We got a credit card ripped off from our office,
mm-hmm.
and somebody went on a buying spree with it, so
right.
we had to report it to the police.
Right.
And they came to my house. We were at home, and we called it in, and for some reason I let him into my house, which
mm-hmm.
was a big mistake. I mean, it wasn't a huge mistake because
right.
they didn't end up doing it, creating any havoc.
Right.
But two of them came into my house, and one of them was actually an African-American police officer who was actually pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, it was interesting. I thought, well, why are two cops showing up at my house for a credit card, you know,
right.
theft? And I was, as I was talking to the one officer who was asking us all these questions, the other one was just standing right behind them and was scanning all over the house. He wasn't even paying attention to our conversation, but he was looking all over my house to see if he could see anything. I could just tell that he was like checking my house out.
Sure.
Seriously.
He's the hidden camera.
And like, you know, and so I engaged him. I sort
right.
of like diverted conversation. I said, "Hey, how's it going?
Right.
You know, what's your opinion about
right.
this?" To try to engage him into and get him, you know, from, I mean, I don't have anything in my house that I'm really, you know, worried about, you know. I mean, I'm a law-abiding citizen. But it was just like, you know, like, what the heck is he even doing here? I felt like suddenly I brought a spy into the house.
Right,
right.
And, you know, it was really cold out, or else I would have just sat on the porch with him.
Right.
You know, and so I just was being polite. But, you know, in retrospect, I tell everybody, don't ever let the cops into your house for any reason whatsoever unless they got a warrant.
Not nowadays.
And I have what's called, I call it the Fourth Amendment chain on my door. You know those little latch chains where you can put up and you open the door?
Right, oh yeah.
Yeah, well, that's everybody should have that. Because if the cops have a knock at your door, you can open it and say, can I help you?
Right.
And they say, can we come in? You say, no. Do you have a warrant? They say, no. And you say, no, at that point, and lock the door.
Right.
Well, if you don't have that chain, a lot of times they'll just push past you and come in and later claim that you gave them permission to come in. If you have the chain on your door, they have to bust it down.
Uh-huh.
And then you can say, obviously, I didn't say okay.
Right.
So that's just a piece of advice that I didn't follow myself the other night, but I just want to let people know to do.
Wow.
Well, I think we need to, you're right, and that he was your undercover camera, basically.
Right.
He's the undercover camera. And what they'll do is they'll see something and then they'll come back later.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will detain you right there until they call the judge and bring the judge to you or bring the paperwork to you 2-3 hours later. And so they can actually come into your home and then stay in your home until they get a search warrant to come into your house later in a couple hours.
Yeah.
And they've done that to a couple people that I know. But I did the same thing. I'm a medical cannabis grower, and I had some patients that were kind of messing with me. And so they called the police on me, and the police came. But I felt so confident that I actually took the female officer by herself. The other one left. She ended up going into my grow room, locked the door behind her, and we just sit in this grow room together by herself. And so then we talked for a little while, showed everything to her, and she said, here's my card. Hold on to it if you have any problems. She goes outside. She gets into her car. She locked her car door, and she left the keys in the grow room.
so
she thought she did. So then she gets on the phone because we go back to the room, and she can't find the keys, and we're looking, and this is at 10 o'clock at night, and she's looking in the grass, and so now she has no keys, so she had to call another police officer to come to let her into her car, and then she had to go, and they did all new locks and stuff, because I called her a couple days later, and she never found the keys.
Okay, I got a question for you. Did she take deep breaths when she was in the grow room?
It's well ventilated. But,
were there some pinches missing after she left?
Right.
A few
did some of the plants have a few less leaves on them?
it was very nice, and it was something that I talked to a lot of people, and they said, well, you shouldn't have done that, but I felt really confident. But today,
yeah, well, yeah.
It's not
I know
smart
what you mean. It's kind of like, look, it's kind of, I've done this before, walking up to the dragon saying, could you open your mouth, please? I want to check a few of your teeth for cavities.
Right.
And it opens it up. You check and go, okay, none there. And you walk away. And you go, did I really do that?
Well, I just wanted to say happy holidays to you.
All right.
Thank you.
There's one person that we should. My wife has got a job working for a company called Working America, and they canvass the city.
Oh, yeah.
And they ask for funds for union and workers' compensation and workers' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really doing a good job. And my wife is out there in the snow and in this rain every night, first time in 4 years, because she was a stay-at-home mom.
Mm.
And I just want to say thanks to her, and that she's doing really good work for the people of the United States and for the people of Portland. And we really need to say thank you to those people that are really helping a dying cause.
Yeah. Actually, I work for Oregon Action. We're going to have our own canvas out in January as well. So I definitely support what you're saying.
Yeah, let's support our people, and let's support our rights, and let's give Potter a call and let him dissolve the internal affairs and let him go through the right process.
Yeah, that's why I keep telling people, you know, there's a charter review process happening. If you want to change Portland's charter, now's the time to make it happen.
We got to do it. Let's do it.
All right.
Take
have
care.
A good one.
Bye.
Thank you. 503-231-8187. We got about 11 minutes left, a big 11, and we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to our next call. Good morning, you're on KBOO.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to, before I get to my main topic, is to let people know that we're all in prison. The only difference between maximum security prisons and minimum security prisons is that the maximum security prisons have walls, and they're down in Salem and places like that. But in society, we're in prison, too. This is minimum security. And I just want to let you know that we're all in prison. Getting on to what I really want to talk about
In what way? Can you expand upon that? I mean, I probably agree with you, but I'd like to know your viewpoint on that.
Well, because as this administration attacks civil liberties, our movement, and what we do,
right?
To me, that's no different than being in prison. It's just that it's hard for us to fathom that because we have freedom of movement.
Right.
And so because
we think we do.
Pardon?
I said, or we think we do.
Or we think we do.
Right.
But the bottom line is that we're still in a minimum security out here. We don't have a lot of freedoms out here. And so that's the difference between being in society and being behind bars.
Yeah, less than before, definitely.
Okay. Now, I want to bring down this administration. And I understand that one of the tactics that they use is divide and conquer, which consists of things like racism, classism, and fear.
Right.
But one of their weaknesses is that once they have too many wars or too many conflicts on too many fronts, I've looked at history, and that's always their downfall.
Exactly, the empire.
The empire. Mm-hmm. And so right now, taking an example of what's going on in New York, we see that a strike on that level, what it's doing to the system, that's just a little small strike. Now,
right.
If we had a general strike going on right now, then to me that is the analysis of a bloodless coup. We need to all have a general strike in America, and we would bring this thing down. We would stop it. And I don't understand why we can't organize. You know, while we can't get past classism and racism and the little material things we think we got, and come together and have a general strike, and then we could demand things as a group of people out here, the citizens.
Yeah, well, the tool of information dissemination is being held by the corporations, and so in order to pull something like that off, first of all, you have to convince the majority of people that it's in their best interest, and in order to do that, you need, you know, the tools of dissemination, which we don't have. We have KABU here, which maybe gets out to 20, 30,000 people, but not maybe to the majority of people in Portland, for instance. And, you know, in terms of America, again, we're stifled by the corporate, rule of the media. So I think that's the big thing. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things is that, you know, Fox News and the corporate media basically, you know, control the airwaves.
Well, then,
and control the consciousness of the people, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I agree to a certain extent, but I'm looking at right now a strike is happening, and it's happening regardless of all the things you just said.
Right.
And
right.
they're hurting the economic system there.
Yeah.
So, and I understand also that there's an illusion out here, and people fall in illusion. 99% of the people in America, I think, is hurting, and they want to change things, but they don't feel like they know how to go about doing it.
Right.
Bingo, bingo. That's it right there. I mean, I think 90% of the people go, oh, my God. You know, they just can't wrap their arms around the serious problems that we're facing. But I think the one common thread that holds those folks together is fear. Right?
Fear.
You got the media saying that if people look like this, they're a threat. You got a president that decides who's a terrorist and who isn't. You've got a Congress that's become so inept at actually looking out for the people who they supposedly serve and represent.
We have torture now, which is an approved.
We've got torture becoming the norm than totally outrageous in our view.
And we're banning big cities like New Orleans, you know, that have had devastation. We don't even help each other out anymore.
What New Orleans made people confront was that there's a whole population that this country has just basically said you're on your own. And that's if you're poor, if you have limited education, if you have a criminal justice background. We've got a whole population that we've created that are people that are not entitled to a basic living.
I like the idea, by the way. I don't want to poo-poo your idea.
Me too.
I think it's really powerful. It's a really powerful idea.
I was going to say, pick a day.
Yeah.
Pick a day and start organizing
now.
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea.
How about April 1st?
I'm willing to join any type of movement that's ready. I mean, I'm ready to do this thing.
I think you got to organize it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great idea. Email me at alan@hippielawyer.com and I'll help you out, okay?
Okay. Thank
you. April 1st. Make it April 1st.
April 1st.
That'd be an ideal day, wouldn't it?
Interesting, yeah.
Be a great day.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate the idea.
All right. I'm going to turn into Joanne Bowman. Hi, I'm Joanne Bowman. We have 5 minutes left. Call in and you make it short or sweet.
Is that how I sound, listening audience?
Off with their heads, said the Red Queen. No, she's much nicer than me. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You got to deal with me, the hippie ogre. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on KBOO.
Good morning. Hey, nice show. I've been listening to you for a while. I called in a few months ago.
All right.
I'm having a little problem, and I called in for some referral help, and Alan said something about the Northwest...
Constitutional Rights Center.
Yeah, but they ran away from it.
Oh, sorry about that.
Well, and the thing is I find myself up against the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I put in motion for appoint counsel, but they went around that. And I've talked to about 100-plus attorney's offices, and I can't seem to get one on board. So I was wondering, what does a person do?
Well, it's hard to say, you know, not knowing the details of your case, and we can't really take that on the air right now. I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm always a sucker to try to help people out. Email me the details, alan@hippielawyer.com. And I'll see what I can do, okay? I can't promise anything, but at least I'll read your email and see if I have resources or people I could send you to.
Well, actually, I showed up at your office, and I spoke with the young lady that you share office with there.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't even take the time. She just ran away from it because there's some felonies involved, and it happened to be members of the Bar Association.
Yeah. Well, what's happening, let me explain to you what's happening, is I'm moving out of town right now, and I'm just like, you know, up in boxes and just trying to leave while people like yourself, you know, are asking me for help, which I, you know, been doing for years and years. So I apologize if you were treated in any sort of rude way, but, you know, it's just kind of like we're trying to, you know, leave town, basically.
Right.
And so, you know,
I'm trying to close out case.
I'm sorry, you know, close out case. So I'm sorry that happened. I mean, I hate it when I feel like I'm the only person in this town who can do that sort of stuff, and if I can't help you out, you're sunk. I mean, I hate to be in that position, and so I don't know what to do. But anyway, why don't you just contact me directly, okay? That's the best thing I could tell you, and I will give you my best effort. I can't promise that I can help you, but I will read your email and try, okay?
I will give it a shot.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
All right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
You are a nice guy, Alan.
Oh,
Joanne
yeah.
Joanne Bowman.
Just, I try.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that. And let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Akibu. You might be our last caller, so make it short, sweet, to the point.
Short, sweet, and to the point. You got it, Alan.
All right.
Hey, what about me?
How about you? Oh, Joanne, I'm sorry.
It's been that way all day, you know?
I'm just a totally unreasonable sexist. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I forgive you.
You're wasting your own time.
Okay, yeah, come on. Yeah.
Short, sweet, to the point. Alan, I want to know what happened to the America I was raised in when I was a kid.
Mm.
All right? My parents immigrated here. I'm first-generation American. My dad had his choice of either coming to America or going to Auschwitz. And he decided on America.
Me too.
Right. All right? What happened to that country, Alan? Where did that go? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, hey, where did it go? Good question.
And the next minute, there is no way to answer that. But it is a perfect question to be pondering as we start celebrating holidays over the next week or so.
That's right. Where did it go? And can we bring it back? Hey, I like the idea of the general strike.
I like the general strike, too.
I like it.
And I think April Fool's Day would be a great day to do it.
Yeah. Hey, so next week's our last show. Help us out. Bring back some memories of our shows.
Yeah.
If you have any. If you just say, oh, what happened?
Tell us what you really liked and what you really hated.
Yeah. And then we'll go out with a bang for the new year.
Cool.
Take care of yourselves.
Same time, same place.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the earth. You don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter told. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours unheard. And now you see the light. You stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Jump, jump.
Stand up for your rights.
Good morning, everyone. This is Marlene Howell on the Thursday Morning Radio Zine. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's gay and lesbian community Yellow Pages, providing a wide array of gay-friendly business listings. For more information at 503-230-7701 or www.pdxgayyellowpages.com. This morning, I'm in the studio with Ruth Kovach, who has recently published a book entitled Help Wanted, poetry that she has written and published in a variety of publications in Portland over the last few years. The book includes photos by well-known photographer Betty Lee, Matt Cummincur, and Derek Pereira. The opening music we had this morning was none other than Regina Carter playing a piece called New York Attitude, a little shout-out for all of those on strike out there in cold New York this morning. But today we're going to be talking to Ruth, asking her a little bit about her book, Help Wanted, and learning a little bit more about what she's been doing in Portland. I know many of you know who Ruth is and have participated with her in various activities, but we're going to hear from the woman herself, and then she's also agreed to read a few poems from the book, Help Wanted, and we'll give you some information as well about where you can get a hold of it. So good morning, Ruth, and thank you for joining me today.
Well, good morning, Marlene. It's always good to get together with you, whether it's on the air or off the air, because you are a busy person.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Now, you've just published this book, Help Wanted, a book of poetry, and I'd like to know if you could share with our listeners, Ruth, a little bit about how this book came about.
Well, actually, I feel that the media of the press and radio and reading and movies and writing, all of the media, is one of the most important aspects of movements for change. And the thing I do is write. And so I try to write whatever I can in articles and viewpoint pieces and news. And I took to writing poetry. And it started to pile up. I had all this activism poetry, and I thought, I'm going to put them together in a collection and make it a coffee table book that someone had put down, and maybe someone who's not in the chorus will be at someone else's house and say, oh, these pictures are nice, I'll look this over, and they might stumble across a few of the truths I'm trying to tell.
Okay. Now, you've been a truth teller for as long as I've known you, and I know it's been much longer than that. Why don't you give our listeners here in Kabulandia just a little brief synopsis of some of the involvements you've had over the years in activism and organizing?
Well, back in 1999, I could go all the way back to 1950 when I was in teacher strikes and in food co-ops and a few other things like that. But in 99, I went to San Francisco for a Mamiya rally, and I came back to organize the Justice for Mamiya Coalition. And as I got involved in the Portland activism community, I realized how many issues needed help, and I got more and more involved each day. And since then, I've been in quite a few groups.
And what have some of those groups been?
Well, I've been in, for the Street Roots, I do some writing. For the Portland Alliance, I started as a volunteer, now I'm a board member. Portland Women's Crisis Line, I'm a board member. I go to the IWW Hall for the forums every Saturday night, and I help in scheduling some of those programs. And, of course, I continue with the work for Mamiya. I've been a member of Radical Women. I certainly have gone to whatever I could about police accountability, another subject that I think needs a lot of attention, a lot of help. And that came to me naming the collection of poems Help Wanted, because what I want is help from everyone who reads the book. I want them to participate and become a part of the activism community.
I want to share with our listeners a selection from the introduction, I should say an excerpt from the introduction of your book, Ruth, and then ask you to read a poem from it. But here is some of the introduction from Help Wanted, a book of poems by Ruth Kovach. Help Wanted. Life is a journey. Mine led me on a path that often seemed to have no direction. However, as I look back, I now see that every side trip was necessary to bring me where I am today. I hope that you will walk that path with me through these poems. I knew I had to write them for you.
Thank you. That's the introduction to the poem, which is the theme of the book, Help Wanted. And I'll begin by reading Help Wanted. This was a poem written in 99, and I was in a period of thinking that whatever was going on in the world was just bad and wrong, and some of us had to get together and work on a movement for change. Help wanted. Untear my heart, uncry my tears, unfeel my pain, unwrite the years. What's going on? Please tell me why. The evil powers have to lie. The time has come, if we are wise, to see the truth and untell the lies.
Okay, thank you. How about one more?
Well, I like this one about the homeless people. I've become very involved in homeless people and poverty by working with Street Roots and other projects I have planned. I call this one Hush Child. And, of course, I think the photos and illustrations are an important part of this book. And this one shows a child peering out of a car. In other words, that might be her home. Mommy, Mommy, I'm hungry and I can't sleep. Hush, child, try not to weep. You must sleep now, pleasant dreams. But, Mommy, Mommy, it's been days, it seems, since we had anything to eat. Hush, child, lay down in the back seat. Maybe tomorrow will be our day. Don't cry, my dear, I'll find a way. Hush, child, try to sleep. Soon morning birds will begin to peep. Ah, she sleeps now. I can go. It breaks my heart. I love her so. Someone will come along after I part. Someone who cares, who has a heart. I can't go on. No one will help me. I'm a hopeless soul, as you can see. I don't really want to die. I just have nothing else left to try. So take my child. Give her food and care. Send her to school. Buy her clothes. Brush her hair. And tell her for me, the world is good. Someday she'll see that Mommy was hungry and couldn't sleep. Remember, my love, and try not to weep.
Thank you, Ruth. Now, if you're interested in learning more about this book or in purchasing a copy of it, Ruth's phone number that she's given me permission to give out on the air is 503-282-0348. That's 503-282-0348. That's the number of Ruth Kovach. If you would like to learn more about how you can how you could purchase her book entitled Help Wanted, which she's reading selections from this morning. Now, Ruth, you and I met a little while ago, and we were talking about some of the motivation for this book, and you talked about that some of the motivation had to do with your own sense of sadness and depression over so many of the issues that you see causing so much pain in the world. Could you elaborate on that a bit for our listening audience?
Well, actually, I call it my year of enlightenment. I was going through a grieving process over loss of a family member, and I thought I could just wallow in maybe a drink or a party or family life, and none of that was fulfilling. And I realized that not knowing what's going to happen is very difficult, but even more difficult is not doing anything about it, the feeling of helplessness. And that's when I started saying, well, I've just got to get out there and do it, start volunteering, show up places, spread the word. And it was a very big learning experience. I was really very shaken by finding out just how bad some things are, such as our prison system and such as the hopelessness of the homeless people and hungry people, such as the lies in our history book. It was a terrible thing to let go of my belief in the red, white, and blue and the democracy that is a farce in many situations. And I just had to start writing it down.
Okay. Now, tell us a little bit about the photographers who are also featured in the book.
Well, there are three photographers. One of them you're pretty familiar with is Betty Lee. Betty Lee has been an activist photographer for many years, a true activist photographer. And she became interested in my project and agreed to let me use many of her photos that are shown in the book in 5x7s or larger. And there are pictures of marches throughout the country, throughout the years, and they just sort of suit the poem they're next to. Another one is Derek Piera. He's definitely a professional photographer who has his own studio. And he's been known to give a lot of photos to the Portland Alliance and other papers. But his enthusiasm for my project has really been a very great source of strength for me to continue and do this goofy thing. And Matt Kamenker is an IWW member, a strong union person, very aware of the activism that needs to be done. And he has taken trips all over the country, and I've used some pictures from his photo collection that were nature shots, and they turned out quite well.
Now, I want to share with listeners another excerpt from your introduction and then ask you to read maybe a couple more poems. Ruth says in her introduction, "When I began to see more clearly, I only maintained sanity by attempting to do a critical analysis of exactly what was going on in my world. I had to let go of the fantasies and excuses for our society and begin to take a personal responsibility for the future." I asked Ruth to be on this program this morning because this is a public affairs segment of the KBOO Morning. And I think it's very important when we do public affairs to get in touch with the fact that there are many ways to address just what she says here, the importance of doing a critical analysis of exactly what's going on in the world. Sometimes that's done through a hard-hitting kind of reporting, and sometimes that is also done with the arts. The main thing is that we keep doing it and keep improving our level of knowledge and digging to the bottom sometimes to find the real truth and then creating the change that we so much imagine is possible.
Marlene, I hope everyone that reads this book hears me as loudly and clearly as you seem to, because that's exactly what I'm looking for, is to make people aware, to take a personal responsibility for change.
You know, when I traveled in Nicaragua a number of years ago, I was really moved by the fact that so many high government officials in the Sandinista party were also poets and published poets, and would often, you know, at public meetings read their poetry. And I could not remember a time when I had ever seen a high government official in the United States share their own poetry as a part of their political analysis. So I'm real glad to have you here this morning, even though you're not a high government official, but you're here reminding us of the essence and the essential part of the poetic voice in the revolution and in our work for change. So how about another poem, Ruth?
Okay, this one has to do with the soldiers coming back from Iraq. We count how many are killed, and that's sad. But the ones who come back, they're not free. They're not okay. Their life has changed. So I've written this, many ways to kill a soldier. There are many ways to kill a soldier and won't be hard to find. They can crush his soul, break his spirit, or destroy his mind. First, offer him a job that calls on his pride, that feeds his family, but takes him from their side. Train him well in hate and obedience to others, especially those comrades he learns to love as brothers. Then use the fastest jets to send him far away with a promise that it's only for a year and a day. Put the gun in his hand and nourish the hate in his eyes. Fill him with patriotism and other outrageous lies. As he bombs factories from the pie in the sky, don't show him women and children who happen to die. Let him pull down the statue as he cheers the peace. Don't tell him the occupation will never cease. He can pass the days guarding prison gates or out on patrol while his bewildered family waits, watching the news of prisoners naked and abused, wondering if he is the soldier they used. They protect his health with shots called vaccines. No one explains what depleted uranium means. The jackets are too thin, the weather's too cold, the Jeep has no doors, it's patched by scrap and it's old. He sees many babies whose mothers lay dead, and he wonders why boys throw rocks at his head. A weekend pass with nowhere to go except the local porno show. Out searching for mines, it costs him an arm, but it's the ticket back home to his family and farm. He's home at last, a hero, feeling fine, because there's a rope in the basement next to his wine, or he'll find courage there in his booze, and he has that gun they taught him to use.
Oh, I just have to sigh after hearing that, Ruth. We are speaking this morning with Ruth Kovach, a local activist and organizer who has just recently published a book entitled Help Wanted, a book of poetry that includes photos by a few very well-known local photographers. Ruth also has self-published a small booklet entitled The Crisis Is Now, and it is a collection of viewpoint articles and letters to the editor that she has written, calling folks to join us in movements for change now. Now, the crisis is now is something that Ruth will actually put together for you if you call her and order a copy of it. So, again, I want to give you her phone number in case you are interested in contacting her. Her number is 503-282-0348. And she also has an email address. This is kind of lengthy, so get that pencil out. It's ruth.kovacs@worldnet.att.net. And I will read that again at the end of the program and also leave it at our front desk for you. Now, Ruth, tell us a little bit about the title of the book. How did you decide that the title for your book of poems would be called Help Wanted?
Well, I thought that the Help Wanted poem stated my position, that I don't like what's happening. I can't understand why it happens, and what we have to do is untell the lies. So that's kind of the title poem. But more important, I want help from everyone that I meet or see or that reads even one word that I write. I want them to help by participating in activism. I want them to help by taking a personal responsibility for change and to participate. If you don't have the courage it takes to go to a march or to tie or chain yourself to something in an illegal action, at least show up at the march, stand on the curb, and give us a cheer, and let the other powers know that there are many of us out there who want this change.
Ruth, what kind of activism have you done over the years? I know you've been involved in marches and letter writing, but give our listeners a, a sense of the kind of activism and kind of what is your style of activism?
Well, I use my writing quite a bit, and Street Roots has been wonderful about publishing things, and so has the Portland Alliance, so I try to get the word out. I go to marches. I have a little arthritis, and it's hard for me to walk, but I show up at the beginning of the march. I walk a ways, and I take a shortcut over, and I bring a camera. I take the pictures for the papers that show that I was at the march if they need them. I have my camera with me in case I see anything going on that, for instance, irresponsible police behavior. I'm ready to take a picture of that and give it to whoever needs it. I print up flyers. Some of them are things that I have to say, and some of them are things that I've been handed at other marches that I think are very worthy. But I go to just about every march with at least 200 flyers. I hand them all out. Anyone who has a petition that they're getting signatures on, and I meet them at the march, I grab a hold of a board and I help them collect signatures. And I put my phone number on everything, and it goes in waves, but sometimes when news is very hot, I get as many as 30 phone calls or 50 emails from people who saw my phone number or saw me at the march. Excuse me. And I'm trying to make the connection for them to say, participate.
Okay. I want to share with our listeners one more excerpt from your introduction and then ask you to read another poem. Ruth writes in her introduction, "And so I set out to see the truth. For if we examine the truth of our history, we will understand the truth of our present. We must untell the lies." You know, Ruth, that comment right there, if we examine the truth of our history, we will understand the truth of our present, just reminds me, I went to see Good Night and Good Luck last night, the story of Edward R. Murrow and some of his work with Fred Friendly at CBS. And my gosh, so many of the things that Murrow said, warning us about what kind of government we would have if we didn't become a people who questioned that government and if journalism didn't take its responsibility serious and challenge people to know what's going on. So much of what he said seemed to be something we could have heard of, we could have heard just today. And then as I was leaving the movie theater, I turned on the radio in my car, and there was an announcement that the USA Patriot Act had been extended for 6 months. I thought, my God, my partner and I were commenting on, boy, isn't this ironic coming out of this film and seeing this film and hearing this up-to-date news. And now I read this in your excerpt this morning. I'm just reminded the power of history to remind us of where we are now. So thank you for reminding me of that this morning. So what's your next poem?
Well, I would add to what you've just said tonight.
Okay.
Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn have been a big influence on me, and they say over and over, "Untell the lies," and they point at history, and I think they're great. The whole collection is not as downbeat as some of the ones I've read, so I'm going to read the grand finale poem, which is "I'm Walking the Walk." And each verse is on a different page. There's 8 pages, and all of the pictures are marches that some from Portland that people may recognize their friends in. "I'm walking the walk down Broadway. I'm taking some action today. I'm carrying a sign, 'This land is mine, and nobody's going to stand in my way. It's been too long since I had a job. This is the day I march with the mob. I'm tired of being poor because of this damn war. I'm going to do more than whine and sob. It's true, you know, democracy is dying. I can't earn a dime, but I got to keep buying. My pockets have holes. It's a joke at the polls. When they give us good news, they're lying. It costs NYC lots of dough for thousands of police in a row, but that was the day they didn't get in our way because we were telling the truth that we know. Come join me out in the street where we in the movement will meet. Come one and all, time to answer the call. We'll chant to a joyful drumbeat. They'll see and hear we're more than a few. We've got courage and unity too. Show capitalists how we're together now. We're going to tell the world what is true. I'm walking the walk down Broadway. I'm taking some action today. I'm carrying a sign, this place is mine, and nobody's going to stand in my way."
Okay, you've just been listening to Ruth Kovach reading from her book titled Help Wanted. And Ruth, where will listeners be able to pick up a copy of this book?
Actually, for now, I think they have to either email or telephone me. Tonight I am going to, it's a beautiful pizza where several people on the team, the photographers and I, who are happy because I was just delivered from the printer last night, and we'll be hanging out there from 7 to 9. And there's a fine young man, a 14-year-old jazz performer, that will be enjoyable listening, as well as greeting some of the people that have been in this project.
And could people pick up a copy there?
And I'll have copies with me there.
Okay, so it's a beautiful pizza over on Belmont.
On Belmont, around 35th
tonight.
Or 6th.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And I have kind of...
Hang on a minute. That's tonight.
Tonight, 7 to 9.
Tonight, 7 to 9. It's a beautiful drop by, get a slice, listen to a little jazz, pick up a copy of Ruth's Help Wanted. And if we can't make it tonight, where else might we be able to get it?
Well, the phone number or the email address that you are giving is a good way. And I have several contacts with bookstores, but I don't like to announce that it's a sure thing till I get the date, and I've been waiting for the delivery of the printing. But I'll be placing it in several of the bookstores.
Okay, the usual suspects, we might say.
The usual suspects,
the,
right.
The independent bookstores
right.
in town, is that
and
what
And once
at?
It's placed okay. there, I'll probably have an evening of a reading and be able to sign copies and have my team there, too.
Okay. Ruth, do you have any particularly favorite poets that you look to for inspiration and guidance in some of the political work you do?
You know, that's what I have to confess is strange about me writing a poetry book. I'm not really into poetry that much. I haven't read much. I haven't written much. But finally, I found out that as I wrote long articles that were anywhere from 400 to 800 to 1,200 to 1,500 words, that I had to learn to cut. And a couple times, I just made sort of outlines of an issue, and I realized, that's almost a poem. And I started working on it, and that's what led to me writing the poetry. But, you know, I've read the standard people, and I always liked E.E. Cummings for one. And I try not to read too much of other people's poems because I don't want to start imitating them. I want each of my poems to be individual and by Ruth.
Okay. Now, something we haven't mentioned to listeners, and unfortunately we don't have a keyboard in here, but Ruth is a pianist, and many of these poems in Help Wanted are very lyrical, and that would only be expected from someone who is a musician and has that musician sensibility in terms of how you see the world and how you feel the world.
Well, that's great you remember that. I still go to the Merrill Hurst Piano Ensemble class, and we perform 3 times a year and so on. Yeah, I have piano students. I keep very busy in my music also. That's in my spare time.
Spare time, okay. Well, that must be something that helps sustain your soul for the struggle, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay. As we're just about to wrap up here, do you want to make just a couple of comments quickly about The Crisis Is Now, your other booklet?
Well, The Crisis Is Now is divided into 2 sections. The first half are calls to action, and the other half is Hunger in Portland. And most of the articles in them have been printed in Street Roots or the Portland Alliance. And the calls to action are typical articles that say, get yourself out of your chair and come out and join us. And we don't have time to read one, but the titles of some that might give you an idea of what I'm writing about would be, Are You an Activist? Or I Wish I Had the Courage? Or Where is the Outrage? And The Hunger in Portland are all about the hunger problem in Portland.
Okay. So again, we've been speaking with Ruth Kovach, local activist. She has just published a book entitled Help Wanted. It will be available tonight at It's a Beautiful Pizza. And we will leave her phone number and email address if you would like to contact her about getting it through just by getting in touch with her. And it will be available in local bookstores later on. And we're going to go out now with a little bit more of New York Attitude by Regina Carter. But thank you again, Ruth, for joining me today on the Thursday Morning Radio Zine.
And thanks for having me, Marlene.